Thank you for joining us for another episode of Baker Hosts Ad Nauseam, a podcast series focusing on new and trending advertising issues with an emphasis on the FTC and the NAD. I'm Randall Reuben King, and you're listening to Baker Hosts. We are once again joined by Amy Mudge and Daniel Kaufman, two partners from Baker Hostetler's advertising, marketing, and digital media team. Together, they have decades of advertising experience and approach advertising issues from multiple perspectives. On today's episode of Ad Nauseam, Amy and Daniel are back to discuss the topic of third-party liability in advertising with special guest Sarah Lavoie, a fellow partner at Baker Hostetler. With that, welcome to Ad Nauseam, and let's turn it over to Amy, Daniel, and Sarah.
We are back here at Ad Nauseam, and by popular demand, or at least modicum of demand, we are joined by the very wonderful Sarah Lavoie. Sarah, welcome back to Ad Nauseam. It has been far too long since you have graced us with your presence.
Well, thank you for having me. We thought we would kick off Q1 of this year talking to my two favorite partners. I swear that's true.
You got to say it because we're the only ones with a podcast. If you want on, you got to do some sucking up. And that was outstanding, Sarah. You can come on anytime.
Thank you.
Today, we chose the topic specifically so we could tap into some of your particular expertise. Our topic du jour is third-party liability. And one of the areas we'll laser focus on is ad agency liability. And of course, Sarah, with your deep background in-house at agencies, you are quite well-versed here.
I spent time at a brand, and then I spent about a decade at two of the big holding companies, so really know what it's like behind the curtain. But before we jump into the legal stuff and talk about third-party liability, the number three makes me think of trilogies. All-time favorite trilogy?
So, okay, I gotta nerd out, and I'm going with the original Star
shocker.
Wars.
Oh, shocker. Shocker, Daniel. I mean, nerd it. Bring it, nerd.
Yeah, I wish Randy Shaheen was here. But what amazes me when I was thinking about sort of trilogies is how often the third one is incredibly disappointing. I think like Terminator, Aliens, the first two were amazing, and then just third clunker. So it is sort of this tradition that film number three is awful. Star Wars number three is pretty good. So I'm big on Star Wars there.
Daniel, I feel betrayed. You told me that you were a Star Trek guy.
I love Star Trek as well, but no trilogy to speak of in Star Trek. So.
Fair enough.
I love them both, but I do prefer Star Trek.
About,
I will admit that.
First of all, Star Wars is six, if I'm doing my math right. Or do we count those as two trilogies?
I think we're up to nine. But yeah, they're separate trilogies.
Okay. And since Randy Shaheen is not here, I do have to probably give him a shout out. He would say Lord of the Rings, but I have so many. We don't like, there are so many. Toy Story 1, 2, and 3. Daniel, that beats your the third one stinks. The third one was the best. And of course, I mean, okay, famous ones, the Godfather trilogy. Back to our beloved 80s. I love the Before trilogy that Richard Linklater did with Ethan Hawke. And those really just won in a couple different decades. Really just powerful stuff. But my actual favorite one is the Living Dead trilogy, the zombie series that George Romero did. And why was it my favorite? Because the third one, again, I would say the best one, Day of the Dead, was filmed in Pittsburgh, and I was an extra when I was in high school.
Okay, that is amazing. Are you visible in the film?
Absolutely not. I did not even get makeup. I'm way in the back, just like holding my arms out.
If we pause the film, can you point yourself out in the background? Because we are absolutely doing a movie night.
You can try. Goodness knows I did. And no, absolutely not. But I will tell you, I was there. I was at the Monroeville Mall and it was baller.
That sounds amazing.
I love zombie movies. But okay, Sarah, how about you?
So no zombie movies for me. I would have to say Hunger Games. I know that's more recent than we're used to, but my kids really liked the books and the movies were good too. Apparently, I'm the type of mom who lets her own children watch a movie about other children fighting to the death.
I don't see a problem with that.
Neither
but,
do I.
I am the wrong person.
There were some good life lessons in there. We would pause every once in a while and reflect. But yes, solid trilogy.
Anyway, so I am relieved. You know, you brought up trilogies and the number three, and we didn't end up talking about that Britney Spears song. But with that, let us kick off the discussion of third-party liability by looking at ad agency liability.
All right, we're getting into the legal stuff. Now, this is actually an area where the FTC has set forth a very clear standard for potential third-party liability. And for decades, that standard has been that an ad agency may be liable for a deceptive act if the agency was an active participant in the preparation of the ad, and when is it not? But and that it knew or should have known that the ad was deceptive. Okay, they don't have to independently substantiate the claims or re-examine evidence or crunch data, but you know, you can't ignore readily apparent shortcomings.
Exactly. And a lot of this goes back many decades to the FTC's Standard Oil case from the 70s. That one went all the way up to the Ninth Circuit.
Yeah, and this was a case, the FTC brought this case administratively, came to a commission decision, and here the FTC went after both the gasoline company and also the ad agency, which was quite involved in both the development and the execution of the ads that were challenged there. And the parties, after the commission comes out with the decision, eventually appealed this case to the Ninth Circuit.
Definitely. We won't dwell on the specifics of the case, but let's dive into what the court says about the potential for liability for an ad agency here. The Ninth Circuit stated that the standard of care to be exercised by an advertising agency in determining what express and implied representations, note that, we'll come back to it, are contained in an ad and in assessing the truth or falsity of those representations increases in direct relation to the advertising agency's participation in the commercial project. So the more you do, the more liability you have on the agency side.
So I understand that for this campaign, the ad agency was involved in the development of it from the very early stages, reviewing all the test results, and was actually at the table at relevant meetings and really was involved in every facet of the campaign.
Yes, that's true. The ad agency was really in it with the advertiser. They had a seat at the table from day one, apparently. And the agency argued they should have been able to rely on the laboratory tests and the procedures that preceded the advertising campaign. But, and this is a big but, the court notes that although there was good accuracy to the testing, the core issue was the implicit representations that were in the ad itself, and that those implied claims went beyond what the testing could support. And given the extensive participation in the campaign, the agency knew or should have known that the ads were misleading. And the ad for that Standard Oil case was a good ad. It was really powerful with powerful visuals. And that was frankly part of the problem. It showed a man in a sharp suit standing behind a vehicle at the gas station, attaching a hose to a balloon, and the balloon was filling up with the exhaust. And that's what led to the implied claim that basically the exhaust, because of this additive to the gasoline, could turn dirty exhaust into good, clean mileage. The implied claim there was that using this gas with this additive could reduce air pollution.
As always, it's those pesky implied ads that are going to get you in trouble. You know, it's interesting. In getting ready for this podcast, we were looking at a bunch of the FTC older cases. Daniel and I love going down that rabbit hole that involved ad agencies. And a lot of the ad agency cases are a bit dated. But a decent chunk of the agencies were working on ad campaigns for car manufacturers.
Yeah, it's hard to tell if that is sort of happenstance or intentional or just a state of the world. But I came across two actions from 1998 where the FTC went after two separate ad agencies that had helped create certain car ads. The focus here was on auto ads that were omitting sort of key cost information or that buried the information in small and at times unreadable print. But in short, the FTC was alleging that these car ads were, again, touting attractive lease terms, but showed cars of much higher value and buried, obviously, material information about fees.
Right, right. And there, of course, the ad agencies prepared and disseminated those ads. And the FTC is going to assume that those agencies should know a thing or two about disclosures, right? But worth noting that we haven't more recently seen many ad agencies being targeted for those sort of fundamental disclosure issues. There's a more recent auto case from 2014 that the two of you discussed in your podcast on demonstrations. The ad in question showed a pickup truck pushing a dune buggy up a sandy beach hill. But the footage was apparently filmed using cables. The ad was filmed reality style, where people looked on amazed at what they were seeing. The FTC went after the car company and the ad agency in that one. And the complaint against the ad agency noted that they prepared and disseminated the ads in question. And of course, they would have known, or at the very least should have known, that the ad did not accurately represent the performance of the pickup truck.
Yeah, I love that. I love that ad. I love that case. And disclaimers were a big issue there too, that you can't use a disclaimer to say, yeah, this isn't real. But look, certainly the ad agency in that case also had a very major role in what was the focus of the FTC's ire. We also had a really interesting announcement back in 96. Love our 90s. The FTC announced two separate cases against the same ad agency for different products on the same day. It was a tough day for those guys.
Yes, I can imagine that was not a good day for the in-house lawyer, for those two to land on the desk. But yes, with those cases, it's interesting because they weren't even in the same industry. One of the complaints involved frozen yogurt ads. And in that one, the FTC alleged that the ads in question implied that the frozen yogurt was lower in fat or calories. And it was actually not low in fat or calories. And in the second matter, the FTC alleged that the same ad agency had prepared and disseminated ads for a design-related toy that featured demonstrations of how the toy works. And I think we, as parents out there, have seen the frustration with this in real life. The FTC's complaint said that the demonstrations of the toy were altered to make the product seem significantly easier to operate than how it operated in reality, and showed little effort from the kid featured in the demo. So somebody's kid over at the FTC had a temper tantrum, I think.
There was clearly a lot of crying going on for some reason. But question, of course, becomes what does it take to show, you know, knowledge or should have knowledge? And certainly when you see demonstrations that are being modified during the literal filming of an ad, kind of seems an easy area to focus on for potential ad agency liability.
So the ad agency liability piece, pretty clean. Good teaching moment. We have well established this new or should have known standard. But there are also a wide range of other areas where the FTC may go after both the primary and third parties in a matter. And affiliate marketing is probably a good way to demonstrate this. There are, of course, many parties involved in affiliate marketing, including the main marketer, the primary marketer, as well as sometimes a very wide network of affiliates that are marketing the relevant products through a wide variety of channels, social, banner ads, website, they act as publishers and the like. So here we have a little bit of a less well-established standard, but certainly an area where parties can be on the hook for the action of others.
But I think the bottom line is, look, if others are involved in the sale and marketing of your products, the FTC cares deeply about all of the players in that ecosystem and how they are interacting with consumers. So if there are affiliates who are saying things about your products that they shouldn't be, you know, such as unsubstantiated performance claims, that's on you. Or if they aren't disclosing financial connections to you, that also can become a real problem for you and your company.
Definitely. And it's a question we get often from advertisers. What about a rogue affiliate who's doing these things? How is the advertiser supposed to know what everyone is doing? And we know that it's complicated, but there is responsibility there. We've yet to see the FTC bring an action that involves a single rogue affiliate. And maybe we never will see such a case, but we know this. The FTC does expect robust training and monitoring of people who are marketing and selling your products. You should have a clear program in place to make sure affiliates know what they can and can't do. You can't set it and forget it with an affiliate marketing program. You also need to monitor what's going on. And all of these things should be in writing. Verbal policies are just not going to cut it.
So, Sarah, I got to say, hearing you say set it or forget it makes me want to get rotisserie chicken for lunch today. So I might have to do that. But Amy, keep us back on track here.
Well, Daniel, while you're patting your belly, I will say, and we're probably near the end of our time, so we won't go into this, but there are a lot of cases in the infomercial context as well that talk about this interaction between a marketer, an agency, and other intermediaries as far as third-party liability that are also good ones to take a look at. But as far as going back to these affiliates, you know, you really do need to do reasonable due diligence about your affiliates, about your partners. You know, pay attention to what they're doing and what you're hearing. Customer complaints, chargebacks, other things should be putting you on notice. It's, you know, it's a really important part of any monitoring program to listen to the complaints that you're getting, listen to the complaints through social listening, and take appropriate action. If you're seeing that an affiliate is using inadequate disclosures or making claims they shouldn't, you got to take immediate action. And it can't just be shame on you, all right? It's got to have some meat. You got to do it in writing. You got to save those receipts. And look, there certainly is an expectation of 100% monitoring, but it has to be sufficient to give you a good sense of what's going on. And again, you've got to respond to what you're learning. You know, how much is good enough? If it doesn't have to be 100%, you know, what we always say is spend more of your time looking at the larger affiliates, but monitoring across the board.
Yeah. And as we look forward into 2025 and sort of lots of questions about what the sort of new FTC is going to focus on, I definitely think that affiliate marketing networks could be an area that gets some increased scrutiny. In addition to the substantive claims and disclosures, we of course know that lead generation also will remain an FTC issue. Is there adequate consent to contact consumers? Need to make sure your programs and your affiliate programs are compliant.
Daniel, really smart observation there. Lots and lots to think about. But Sarah, why don't you bring us home with some key pointers?
Sure. We have the power of three again. Trilogy. Here's a trilogy for you, Daniel.
I hope the third one's not going to disappoint, Sarah.
Daniel wants chicken. He's moved on from trilogies, but please go ahead.
So number one for ad agencies, make sure your teams know the legal standard and know that they should and can ask questions and raise concerns. Just because your client wants to make an outrageous claim doesn't mean you should be a part of that. Be the speed bump. Things can keep rolling forward, but sometimes they need to slow down so you can get it right. Two, ask enough questions so that you're comfortable that the ad's okay. The FTC isn't expecting the agencies to do their own statistical analysis of a clinical study, but look for obvious flaws or red flags, and also keep that substantiation on file. To Amy's point, you want your receipts. And three, do due diligence on your affiliates at the outset and then on a continuing basis to make sure there's good behavior in place, because their failings can become your major problems.
So Sarah, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. And ad nauseum folks, thanks for listening. If you've got any things or topics you want us to focus on, please always let us know. And thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Amy, Daniel, and Sarah. If you have any questions for Amy, Daniel, or Sarah, their contact information is in the show notes. For more information on the latest developments in ad law, visit our Adventures in Law blog at www.adventures-in-law.com and check out all Ad Nauseam episodes by subscribing to Baker Hosts wherever you get your podcasts. As always, thanks for listening to Baker Hosts. Comments heard on Baker Hosts are for informational purposes and should not be construed as legal advice regarding any specific facts or circumstances. Listeners should not act upon the information provided on Baker Hosts without first consulting with a lawyer directly. The opinions expressed on Baker Hosts are those of participants appearing on the program and do not necessarily reflect those of the firm. For more information about our practices and experience, please visit bakerlaw.com.